Hey, welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. I'm your host, Steve, and this is episode 85, where I'm talking about classroom management and that sometimes you just need to do a redo or start over, and it's okay to do that.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
You know, here we are at the mid-year point. And sometimes, you know, as the year's gone on, maybe we didn't address things as well as we should have. You know what I'm talking about. In our classes, we've kind of let, we ignored some things, or we should have been better at addressing some other things. Whatever it is, our classroom management is kind of waning a little bit, and we know that we really could be doing a better job. Well, if that's the way you feel and you're kind of ragged and you're thinking, oh my goodness, do I really have to go back into that class? Well, that's not good. So there are things that you can do. And one of those things is to simply start over. And it's okay to do that. Matter of fact, we always have a weekend coming up, or we might have some sort of a lengthy holiday coming up. No matter what, the best way to do it is that you leave that Friday with the intent of getting your act together over the weekend, and you come back on that Monday or that Tuesday, and you're ready to start. So let's talk a little bit about this, because first of all, we need to understand that teaching is experiential. And what I mean by this is that we typically get better by doing. And I know that sounds odd to just kind of say that, because it seems like a duh, but I'm serious about this. We have the ability to do, and then hopefully learn from our mistakes, figure out what worked and what didn't work. And it's so important to pay attention to that, because if we know what we're doing, we're conscious of it, we're doing things on purpose, then we've got to pay attention to what worked and what didn't work and make adjustments, try something different or do something similar. But no matter what, you're paying attention to what worked, what didn't work, what failed, and don't do that again type thing, you know, because once in a while we do find those things out. You know, I'll never forget as a 10th grade history teacher, one of the things I learned, I had some colleagues who were very good at doing games like Jeopardy and things like that. Well, the first time I tried that, no one told me how really exact you have to be on the rules of it about how kids get points. Kids will argue with you about those points and it could cause you a nightmare. Well, as with anything, you learn from your mistakes, and sometimes we're going to fail. That first Jeopardy game was a complete failure. Well, let's talk a little bit about starting over, because if what's happened in your class is that they're driving you nuts, all right? They're just driving you nuts. You've lost control, and you know it. You're being honest with yourself. You know that you could have done such a better job of keeping control of the class. Now, the first thing I got to say, by the way, is get rid of the thought that you can discipline them into stopping. That's not going to happen. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. But basically, I have five key tips here, or five key elements of starting over. All right. So let's get into this with the redo, the idea of, you know, I got to start again. And here we go. So here's tip number one. First of all, choose a weekend that you're going to start again on that Monday or that Tuesday, because it's a long weekend. Over that weekend, you're going to get your act together and you're going to create those things that you need to have in place for that Monday when you get in, and you're going to introduce them to them. And so right now, you know, the first big step is to, number one, admit you got a problem, and number two, say, okay, I'm going to get this under control, and choose that weekend in which you're going to get your act together and you're going to start it again on that coming Monday or Tuesday. Now, it can't hurt to enlist the help of a colleague who might be your critical friend. In other words, the idea that you're going to create the things that I'm going to talk about here in just a second and have them give you input as to whether, you know, they think it's good or bad, or, you know, whoa, you're asking for trouble there, man. Or, hey, I like that. I think you could do this. All right. If you have that type of friend or colleague that can really help you with this type of stuff, I strongly encourage you to enlist their assistance over this weekend. All right. So here we go. So number one, just admit you got the problem and choose your weekend. This is the weekend I'm going to do it over. All right. So now, number two is, if the first element is choose your weekend and admit you have the problem, number two is you have to, in being honest with yourself, you have to recognize that you have to be in control of you. You have to do some self-reflection here. You have to know who you are. And this sounds a little gooey here, but I mean it. If you don't know a little bit about you, you can start over as many times as you want, and you're never going to get control of you because you don't know you. All right, that's a lot of yous, isn't it? But what I'm talking about here is simply this. You know, somebody has to be the adult, and it needs to be you, which means that, you know, you got to recognize where your issues are. For example, do you ignore things? Oh, come on, you know what I'm talking about. You know, if I just ignore it, it's going to go away. You know, I know they're talking over there. And, oh, I know I heard a four-letter word come from that group, but I'm just going to ignore it. I know that Steve was late again today, but, you know, Steve's a good kid, and I'm not really going to. Or, you know, if I let Steve sleep today, then it's okay to let Steve sleep because at least he's not bothering anybody. You know, you make excuses with yourself about why you're not doing what you should be doing. Do you do that? This is what I mean about, you know, you have to be in control of you. Recognize these things. So here's some ideas. Do you ignore things? Are you inconsistent? Do you keep it in? Come on, you know what I'm talking about. The idea that you keep it in, it starts frustrating you. Whatever's going on, it's making you angry. You're keeping it in, though. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm not going to deal with it. Keep control. Keep control, Steve. Keep control. And what happens is that instead of keeping control, you're actually getting angrier and angrier, and eventually you're going to explode. Ah! I'm being funny, but I'm not, because I've seen this too many times. And usually, the kid who ends up bearing the brunt of it is actually not the kid who's caused most of the problems in the classroom. Matter of fact, they may have just caused none in that day. They just happen to be the one kid who now does something, and you're just ready to pop. Bink! Yeah, there it goes. Well, you don't want to do that. And so, if number one is you got to admit you got a mistake and you got to choose your weekend to do over, well, number two is you got to recognize you. You got to be in control of you. Somebody has to be the adult. So you got to recognize those issues that you have. So you got to stop and think and look at what issues you have. You know, along with this, being in control of you also means that you look at the behaviors that you might have when you do deal with things. Do you yell? Do you threaten? Do you make promises you can't keep? Come on, you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to give you ISS for the rest of your life. I'm going to keep you in detention until I'm old and until you are pulling retirement. Oh, those are threats you can't keep, man. And the kids know that. And maybe those are exaggerations, but not too far off base. When people get angry enough at the kids, they say things that they can't enforce. And when the kids know it, then that kid who's going to challenge you has you. Within being in control of you and the idea that somebody has to be the adult, you also have to recognize that it is so important to recognize what pushes your buttons. If a child rolls their eyes or smacks their gums or teeth, does that push your buttons? Does that make you lose control of you? Does that make your temperature just skyrocket? It does me, and I have to keep control of that. And so you have to know when you're losing control. And sometimes control means you're angry. Sometimes it simply means that you're being inconsistent, that you're ignoring things. So if number one is you got to admit you got a mistake and you got to choose a weekend, number two is that you have to be in control of you, and you got to recognize the signs of those issues that may be that you're losing it, or maybe that you're being inconsistent, and ignoring things. Well, if number one is recognizing you had a problem and setting that weekend, and number two is you have to be in control, somebody's got to be the adult. Well, number three is, do you have procedures that you need to have them follow? Which means that over that weekend, you've got to sit down and say, what is it that is necessary in class that they're not following? What is it that they're not doing? Procedures are things like the way you start and stop class. Do you have those? Oh my gosh, that can cause some of the biggest problems with a teacher in the classroom. If you try and talk over the kids, you're giving them instructions and you're letting them talk. Blah, 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 blah. Now listen, class, 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 listen to me. Blah, 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 blah. And just keep trying to talk over them. No, 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 no. And then don't beg them. Oh, please, class, just listen to me now. Oh, come on. That's not going to work. But yelling's not going to work either. You have procedures. You should have a procedure in place. The number one procedure that you should have in place is how you start and how you stop class. What goes along with that is being able to tell the kids what being on time for class means. Does it mean that you're inside the door, or does it mean that you're in your seat and you've started working on the bell ringer? Huh? Do you have something like that? Have you ever been to a concert? Or were you a musician at one time? Well, where I'm going with this is that conductors typically have the way they start and stop their group from performing or from practicing, period. As a former music student, one of the things that I learned a long time ago, and most of my conductors were consistent about this, even though they were people of different ages and different backgrounds, they taught us that we could play and make all the noise we wanted to until they stepped on that podium. When they stepped on that podium and looked at us, they were ready, which meant that our instruments went down. When the arms went up, that meaning that our instruments came back up. Notice what I said. When they stepped on the podium and looked at us, they taught us that our instruments went down. And they usually had a position they taught us. I played trumpet, and so that position was it went in my lap. When they raised their arms, they taught us that it was ready. It went to the ready position, which meant that it was held upwards on my knee, ready to be lifted to my lips. The point is that they taught us this. And when we didn't do it right, they practiced it again and again and again until we got it right. Well, if you're going to do a redo, you got to practice the things that you want them to do, and you got to take time to do it. Because that is the number one aspect of starting over, is telling them what you need them to do and then practicing it and then reinforcing it and doing it that way. So, for example, if you teach them how to start class, this is how I start. I go to the front of the room and I look at you and I say, let's get started. Well, then don't talk if they're still talking. You got to wait till they quiet down. Now, some people like Harry Wong teach us that there are other ways of getting their attention. Like you could do give me five, you hold the hand up and you count down to five or count down to one. Maybe you hold up your hand just to get their attention. Maybe you put up three fingers, one, two, and by three, they're supposed to be quiet. No matter what, you have to teach them what you're expecting them to do. What I used to do is I would come to the front of my class and I would look at them. And I taught them, when I come to the front of the class and I look at you, I'm ready to begin, and I'm waiting for you to be quiet. No yelling, no begging. This is what we're doing. All right, so I would strongly encourage you to think about if, you know, number three is, do you have a procedure that you need to have them follow? Well, look at starting and stopping class. Do you have a procedure for starting and stopping class? If not, this weekend is when you create it. How you start class, what starting on time means, and then stopping, which means that the bell doesn't dismiss them. You do. Which means that they don't gather at the door. They stay in their seats. They clean up around their seats. They make sure everything's put away. Now, don't hold them hostage when the bell rings, because you're going to be in trouble. But what you do need to do is spend enough time teaching them and practicing what stay in your seats means. If you end early in classes, you're just asking for trouble. So that's why planning enough bell to bell is important as often as possible. But I would look at the procedure for starting and stopping class. Do you have it and do you do it? Because what you're going to want to do is practice this on that Monday. When you come back, you're going to say, this is what we need to do. Think about some other procedures that you might need. For example, that you might have difficulty with. Turning in papers. Where do they do this? How do they do this? Leaving class. Using the restroom. These typically cause issues. because teachers ignore the kids coming back late from class, or they allow them just to go down the hallway to use the restroom. They don't do passes. They don't do anything like that. And then they don't know how long the kid's been gone. They don't know what's going on. And not that I'm saying that some kids will take advantage. Oh, yeah, I am. Some kids will take advantage of you. Right? So you've got to create procedures for this. So if number one is you got to admit you got a problem, and then you got to choose a weekend to say, I'm going to do over. Number two is that what you've got to do is you have to recognize that you have to be in control of you, and you've got to come up with and identify those problems that you might have, like ignoring things or holding things in and not dealing with what the real issues are. Well, number three then is, do you have procedures that you need to follow? And what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to create a list of those procedures, because you're going to give them to them on Monday. Well, that brings me to number four. Number four is you need to take a look at your classroom rules. A lot of times, teachers who struggle with classroom management, they have too many rules. The rules are too specific, and they deal with all kinds of stuff. You know, one of my favorites is Harry Wong when it comes to this, because he says that you really don't need more than five. And not only do you not need more than five, you really should stick to three. And I agree with him. Three is all you really, really need. And the first rule that I would have is something about respect. Mutual respect. I'm going to respect you, and you should respect me, because it's a mutual thing. And then you define it for them, and you give them examples of what disrespect is. And what you can do here is you can tie everything into respect. I kid you not. I mean, think about this. If a kid rolls their eyes, that's disrespectful. Okay, what about if a kid smacks their gums? That's disrespectful. What if they interrupt somebody else speaking? That's disrespectful. If they're late to class, that's disrespectful. Do you see where I'm going with this? Everything can be tied into respect, and then you explain to them what you mean by this. Now, that means that it's a two-way street. You need to respect them also. Think about behaviors that some teachers might have. You know, I think about the one of the many movies that were made in the 80s about kids in high school and teachers. You know, they always make teachers and principals into the goofy characters. But one of my favorites is from a movie called Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where in this movie there's a teacher named Mr. Hand, played beautifully by Ray Walston. And this character, he really has no respect for the kids. And in one scene, he's passing out papers, and he's handing them out, and he goes, F, 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 as he plops their paper down on their desk. He's announcing out to the whole class how you did on your paper. Not only that, he's saying it with such vileness and, you know, venom, basically to tell the world, you failed my test. Well, that's not respectful to kids. Oh, my goodness. And they know it. And so all you're going to do is pull out of them behaviors that's disrespectful to you. So it's a two-way street. So my point here is that now we've got to look at these rules. So if number one is respect, don't write it as you will be respectful. Say, be respectful. Right, in a positive manner, right? And then you explain to them that you'll be respectful also. Now, numbers two and three can be about various things. For example, you know, maybe you want to have something about be on time and ready to learn. Well, then you better be able to explain to them what on time is and ready to learn means. All right, and then you got to enforce it. You might also have something about be safe. You know, a lot of us might do labs and stuff like this. Therefore, you've got to have some rules about be safe would, you know, then entail a conversation about lab safety rules, you know, like wearing safety goggles and all that sort of stuff. Maybe be safe in your classroom is simply that what you're talking about here is things like keep your hands to yourself and we don't mess with the special utility knives or whatever else you have in your class unless under direct adult supervision, something like that. I don't know. Those are some possibilities. Maybe one of your other rules has to reinforce the electronic device rule for your school or just to say something about it. Or maybe it specifically has to do with food or drink. You're in a computer lab where your class always is held and the kids have, you know, you don't want them to have food and drink for the, you know, you understand the reason. I mean, you don't want them to accidentally spill that Sprite in the middle of the keyboard or something like that. So the point here is that, you know, the number one rule should be about be respectful. Write it in positive manners. So if we're going to do this, we're going to have three of them, be respectful, be safe, and be on time, ready to learn. Or be respectful, be on time, ready to learn. And something about the electronic devices, maybe you could say, remember all electronic devices are to be kept on silent and away until given permission to use them. something like that. You know, there's different ways of doing that. So my point is that your most important one is at number one, but don't bore them to tears with all of this. If you get too carried away with being too specific, what happens is you're going to pin yourself into a corner, and some kids pride themselves on that because they want to see if you're going to drive it home with them, if you actually are going to push that rule all the way to whatever they've done. If you do have rules, then you got to have consequences. Now, we'll talk more specifically about consequences another time, but right now, I just want to say this. First of all, take a look at what your school allows. Do they allow you to have your own detention? If they do, that's awesome, because what you want to be able to do is you don't want to threaten kids with write-ups to administrators. If you do that, some kids take that as a challenge, and they want to get out of your classroom. So they're going to see if they can get you to push that button. What you really want to do is have something like this. You want to be able to say the first one is a verbal warning, but with that verbal warning, I contact home. So I'm going to talk with you. I'm going to give you that warning. I'm going to make note of it. You got to keep a record of it someplace. I'm not a big believer of putting it on a board. I know that was it for a long time, but I'm a big believer of putting it somewhere in a document that you have, a journal or some sort of notebook that you keep on your desk for each class period that you teach, whatever. And you write down that you had to give a verbal warning to Steve today. Well, then one of the things that you tell the kids is that when I give a verbal warning, I do call home to talk to your parent or guardian about what had happened today. The second time you have to talk with me, then what should happen again is automatically it is a talk home, and maybe it's going to happen during that class, depending on what it is that I did. Now, notice this doesn't have to do with fights and just really bad situations that are emergencies. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about regular type of stuff that are just annoying. The kid is trying to get under your skin and needs enforcement of your rules. Well, like I said, don't threaten them with a referral to the administrator, because that's giving away your power. Instead, you want them to understand that I'm going to do this verbal warning, and then the next time I'm looking at what's going to happen is that I'm immediately going to call home, and you're going to receive some sort of consequence like an after-school detention or a break detention or something like this, and know what you're doing there. If your school holds a school detention, then your detention shouldn't be longer than that. For example, I had some colleagues who would say, my detention is 2 hours, and the school's detention was 45 minutes. So guess what? If you're a kid, you're going, well, I just won't show up to her detention because it's 2 hours. Instead, I'll skip that and let her get it, and then I'll get assigned to the administrative, and then I only have to stay 45 minutes. What's funny is the kids don't think about this. When I was an assistant principal, I'd say, do you understand that now you've created a file with me? Ooh, didn't think about that. But help yourself out. Find out what the school does so that yours is underneath that. And just another thing that needs to go with that is that when they come in there, you really, it's about owing you time. They wasted time during class, whatever they did. It's about wasting time. You shouldn't reward them by giving them candy or giving them the ability to sleep during your detention or rewarding them with the idea that they just have to be in there and they're allowed to do their homework or something. This is not, no. If you're doing academic detention, that's totally different, which means that they have to come because they're not doing their work and they spend time getting caught up on their homework. That's different. But if it's for behavior, it's the best thing to do. And by the way, don't have them do things that, just kind of reinforce the behavior. You really want to have them come in, sit, explain to them what they did wrong, and say, don't waste my time again. But for the next 15 to 30 minutes, you're going to sit here, and I'm going to waste your time. So thank you for being here today. That's one way of dealing with detentions, all right, and the consequences. But if you're going to do it, you got to follow through. So know what's going to happen. Now, some kids aren't going to show up, and I strongly encourage you that what you do is you contact the parent and let them know that it's going to happen, and then when their kid doesn't show up, then you contact the parent back again. You say, I think there may have been a miscommunication, but Steve didn't show up to my detention today like we talked about, and I'd like your help because I'm going to give him one more chance, and he needs to be there tomorrow. And what needs to happen is that if he doesn't show up tomorrow, don't threaten. Just if he doesn't, then you need to have talked to your administrator already to talk about what's really feasible in your school. Which at this point, should I refer him to the administrator or should I lengthen my detention or create another higher detention? I create two or something like this and get the parent to bring him to that. Typically, when they ignore it, what happens then? And I, as an assistant principal, I used to tell the kid, all right, this is insubordination now because you had a chance. The teacher even gave you a second chance and you ignored it. Therefore, now you're coming to me and now you've added insubordination to what you did wrong. And that would allow me then to do everything from Saturday school to in-school suspension and to make the consequences a little more severe. So you know, work closely with your administrators. Don't be afraid of them. Go to them and say, hey, I need some help here. So when you're planning this redo, you need to have talked to them about what your possible consequences can be. What is it that's possible in your school? Important stuff right here, all right? So keep in mind that you want to talk about, you want to think about in your rules what it is that you're going to include in that respect. That's got to be your number one. Get rid of, if you got too many rules, get rid of them. Just narrow it down to three. Five's okay, but three is tops, and everything's about respect. And believe me, you can tie everything to respect, okay? So now if we've talked about rules and consequences, and by the way, when you're dealing with your consequences, one of the things you always can do is you can involve a parent conference where you bring them into school because you're getting too high up, and ultimately there can be a referral, all right? But like I said, another episode, we'll get a little more detail into consequences. Well, if number one is you got to admit that you got a problem and you then got to pick a weekend, I'm going to start over. And number two is that you have to be in control of you and you have to decide that I'm going to be the adult, which means that you identify your behaviors that are interfering with you being in control. And number three is you decide what procedures that you got to have in place. Well, number four is that you've got to have the rules then that you got to have in place. Well, then number five is, let's go back to you. You've got to make sure you're consistent because what you're going to do now is you're going to create this list of procedures, your rules with the consequences. You're going to create a piece of paper that you're going to do a couple of things. You're going to have a poster that you're going to have on your wall of the rules, a poster of the procedures. You're going to have a piece of paper that's going to go to them. And you're going to say, this is what I'm going to do. And I want you to keep this in the front of your notebook. And then you've got to stick to it because one of two things are going to happen. Either kids are going to go, wow, this is pretty cool. She's actually going to try and do this. Or someone's going to say, well, I'm going to push your buttons and I'm going to see if you're really going to stick to it or not. And you got to be ready for when they challenge you because you want to have somebody try and push your buttons right off the bat. So then you can use the new you and show them that you're ready to move on. Just keep in mind that you can't discipline them into... into getting better. That's not the way it works. It actually comes out of developing relationships with them, not being their best buddy, but it comes out of connecting with the kids because they'll do more for you before they'll ever do the content as they connect with you. And so some teachers make the mistake. I've had teachers who I'm working with who the first words out of their mouth are, teach me how to do a write-up. Well, hang on a second. Slow that boat down, man. Because the first thing you should be thinking about is, how am I going, what is it that I want to enforce? How am I going to get the kids to buy into it? And then how am I going to be consistent about it? Not thinking about referrals, because referrals mean you give up your power and authority and you turn it over to the administration. And some kids know they got you then. And I got to tell you, it takes time. Once you give this information out to them, these pieces of paper out to them, you then have to practice it. And I would encourage you to do this for as many days as it takes to practice and remind them that this is the new you, this is what they're expected to do in the class, and enforce those behaviors. So keep in mind, you can always start over. It just means that when you start over, be consistent, do what you say you're going to do, and follow these four steps. One, admit you got a problem, and figure out what that Monday is going to be that you're going to start over. So you got a weekend to put it all together. Number two, what you want to do is you want to remember to be in control of you. So therefore, that means you've got to look at you. You've got to do a self-evaluation, self-reflection, and figure out the things that you do that interfere with you. Number three, do you have procedures that you need to have them follow? We'll put them down in writing. Number four, look at your rules. Do you have too many rules? Do you not have any rules? Do you have rules that you don't enforce? And are they posted where they can see them? Five is okay. Three is best. And I kid you not, having number one rule, be respectful, and then you describe what be respectful means to them, and you have the kids help come up with examples of it, I guarantee you they're going to get that but it also means that you got to be respectful to them. Don't be Mr. Hand. F, F, F. You got to be respectful back. They're going to expect that. Well, number five then is, let's go back to you. Be the adult. Be in control of you. You've got this. If you do this, if you follow these five key elements, if you recognize that you need to be in control of you, somebody's got to be the adult, and you do these other four steps, you're going to have much, much more success. And just remember, our field is so wonderful in working with children. But in order to experience the magic, you have to be consistent and have some boundaries, and you have to have some rules and procedures in place, and you got to be in control of you. You can do it. You can. I believe in you. So have you chosen your weekend? Have you admitted you got a problem? And are you ready to start? Take care.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.